Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan and Ricky Addington.
Clowning around.
Space elves!
And Justin True.
Ricky just woke me up.
What's going on, guys?
Dude, it's been a high hobby weekend for me. Just really stoked for all the announcements that came out from Warhammer Fest.
Yeah, good times. I really didn't expect an Age of Sigmar version 2.
Yeah, that was
surprising.
Shocking is the word, not surprising.
Is that a Sigmar joke, Ricky?
No.
No, it's just a thesaurus. He used another word.
I guess it could be. But no, I was literally just kind of floored by it because, yeah, I did not expect that one to come in June. And, you know, that's right around the corner.
I was playing, you know, I've been playing a lot more recently. And I have found myself, man, I just wish I had a command point reroll.
I know. We've been playing the Season of War, the Firestorm. And in that campaign setting, it actually gives you essentially command points. It gives you stratagems in Age of Sigmar. So when you're playing in that campaign, you do get rerolls.
And very interesting.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It is wonderful.
Well, this episode, we're going to be talking about Harlequins. That's going up for pre-order right when you're hearing this, or soon then, or whatever. We're releasing this on the day of pre-order. If you are watching us or listening to us or whatever, please hit subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, or as many likes or as many stars as you possibly can on where you're hearing this. Every little bit helps. We really appreciate it. That's how other people find it. Thank y'all very much for listening and following us, especially as we've got all this content coming out this year. I mean, this is 8th edition, jam-packed with stuff, getting ever closer to having a codex for every released army.
Yeah, we're definitely in the home stretch for that, I would say.
Yeah, I think so for sure. Got some upcoming events that we've been talking about. Got the Slugga June 9th and 10th in Louisville. That is coming up in several weeks. It's weeks at this point.
Isn't that about 3 weeks away?
Yeah.
I crept up quick.
Yeah, shaping up to be a great event. I know the people in that area are pumped. Got some people coming from out of town. It should be a really great time. If you're on the fence, have any questions, please give us a shout. Happy to answer them. The mission pack is done and up. And there are actually some primer events happening this weekend. I can't announce them to get you to go because of when we have to release this episode, but we will be giving reports about how they went, and of course looking for feedback from anybody playing the missions and stuff. That's how the event gets better. After that, getting ready for the ATC, as you know. You'll probably see Harlequins in some form or fashion at the ATC.
I would imagine.
Yes, because they're going to work, probably, I think they're going to work their way into some Eldar builds, and especially the ever-popular Yunari builds.
Yeah, as we delve into this and show some of the combos and stuff, it's really going to show the breadth and depth of like how that Yunari and Eldar factions work seamlessly together. There's going to be some scary lists with it.
I'm on record saying that, you know, my hobby project this year is Harlequins. And I'm also going to admit that I have not gotten much progress with that.
I was going to say, I haven't seen a lot of Harleys come out here.
Well, I've got models built. Yeah, and I'm helping a couple of my buddies get their armies tournament ready. So that is taking up some of the hobby time. I'm happy to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying that's just where the hobby time is gone. And I have been posting a bunch of work in progress stuff up on Twitter. Like I'm painting the Hemlock Wraithfighters. Because of, you know, I've kind of always been on the fence with them, if, you know, whatever, but I think that they can play a role in some of the lists that I'm kind of thinking up, and especially some of these tournaments coming up. I finally got a green that I'm happy with. I've been trying to hold on to the same green color scheme that I've had since I chose to go Beltane 20 years ago.
Yes, yeah, it's not an easy color to match anymore, that's for sure.
And I've abandoned the idea of getting the exact match, and I've gone with something that is repeatable and attainable and close enough with current colors, and I was able to, and I started, I repainted the base coats on Moses. It's the second paint job, so you guys actually saw, you saw the first one, and I didn't like the way that went. I did it over again, and then I put the vines on one. I'm happy with how it turned out, so I'm going to do the other two. Now I have a flock of Hemlock Wraithfighters.
A hem flock, as it were.
Yeah, so between that, the Necrons, some Ultramarines, some Ghouls, You're going to be seeing some Deepkin coming as soon as well. So again, my sidebar hobby project has taken, just hasn't been the time for it. But I think this codex is pretty darn good, and we'll talk about why. And let me just jump into why I think that the Harlequins are at least going to be a lot more visible, and you'll see more of them on the tabletop than you had before, because there's basically wholesale point reductions. Some of this stuff I think was necessary, like the Death Jester. The Death Jester is down 35 points to now he's a 45 point base.
Dang.
Yeah. The Shuriken Cannon is still 10 points, and that still does exactly the same thing as it's done before. It's got that single shot that he can do, but if he kills somebody, the unit takes an additional D3 mortal wounds. They can snipe characters still with the Deadly Hunter rule. That's the model can target characters even if they are not the closest unit.
Yep, that's right.
So you're going to say, well, Paul, they've got a 24-inch range on their gun. They're never going to be in range. But there's a couple different ways to mitigate that. One, they have an 8-inch move, which, I mean, that came in the, or that was in the index also. So that's really a 32-inch move? Or a 32-inch range they've got there?
Yeah, that's right.
And then there is a relic that you can take that is a souped-up version of the Shuriken Cannon that gives them an extra 6-inch range.
It's a good model if that's what you're kind of, gearing towards. I think it's just going to be one of those more thematic kind of things. Like the Death Jester just looks really cool, and you can put him in a list, and it's going to look good on the table. He's not the most competitive choice, but he's definitely not like a bad choice either. You're not going to lose more games because you chose him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. The relic is has a better AP too. The relic is it's extra range, it's an extra strength, and it has extra AP. So it is a upgrade all around. Not just the range. So if you're thinking like, why would I take that relic slot up for something like that? It does have increased stats all around. And it's nice that the stratagem for the Death Jesters that allows them to up, I believe it's up the damage on the weapon.
Yeah. It makes the damage D3 if I'm remembering it correctly, instead of just damage one.
It also applies to the relic as well. Like specifically in the stratagem says the Shuriken Cannon the Shrieker Cannon or this.
Yeah. No, and one of the things, I'm really glad that it went down in points, because I remember that was one of the biggest kind of gripes about overpricing among the Harlequins players that I know of, was that just like, there's no reason to take this guy. He costs so much, but he doesn't do as much in relation to other characters who are similarly pointed. One of the things that kind of made this guy valuable before, though, was that was back when, commissars weren't as destructive as they are now to your opponent's morale. This was a time where, the conscript blobs surrounded by commissars were a lot more common, and sniping those kinds of characters out was a bit more important. I've seen lately just I'm not Englishing right today. I've seen fewer snipers in modern 8th edition than I did
when 8th edition started. Mentioned that the Shrieker Cannon is what he has. I think I said that was 10 points earlier. It's 0 points. The Shrieker Cannon is 0 points.
Okay. Wait, so he's what now? Like total?
He's 45 points.
45 total.
Yeah, he dropped 35 points from the...
Oh, 245.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't hate him. And don't forget, the cannon is assault. So he's moving 8... running and still just taking minus one to that.
Yeah.
So he's hitting on 2, so he goes to 3. So if you need to get there, I mean, don't forget that he can still run and shoot. So there's that. Now, here's the thing. I don't even know why I'm saying that, but he can still assault too, right? Because he can, with Rising Crescendo.
He does have the Rising Crescendo. This model can advance and charge in the same turn. In addition, it can fall back and still shoot and or charge in the same turn.
Okay. I don't really see me using him for that, but still, it's there.
If it's there, yeah.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, I ain't going to turn it away.
Well, he has the ability also, death is not enough. If any models flee from a unit in the same turn that has been attacked by this model, then you can choose the first model that flees instead of your opponent choosing.
That's pretty big, actually.
That is kind of cool.
That is massive, if you ask me, because it's just if the unit was attacked by this model, not if... it somehow took a morale test just off of whatever casualties this did, is that if it was attacked by the model, doesn't say shot, could be assaulted, whatever.
It doesn't even have to do any damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. If a model flees from a unit in the same turn has been attacked by this model, then you can choose the first model that flees instead of your opponent choosing.
Goodbye, special weapon.
There's some guy with an agonizer or whatever wearing you out. I mean, I think that that is... now, it won't come up all the time.
It's going to be one of those just completely random things that when it happens, your opponent just goes, ah.
Well, think about this. You know, we were talking about including them in a combined arms force also, you know, something mm-hmm. with multiple detachments from different factions. You know, stuff like the Hemlock Wraithfighter I was talking about gives a -2 to leadership around it. Dark Eldar have a ton of leadership modifiers. I mean, these are just things that will come up.
Mm-hmm. Combo.
If you force it, right?
It's crazy, yeah. Like, the stuff that you can do between all of the different factions that, you know, kind of merge together, it's just insane.
Yeah, yeah. The Rise and Crescendo that you just mentioned, that's something that's common to, I want to say it's every Harlequin unit that's not a vehicle. Even the Skyweavers, the guys that are on the jet bikes, have Rise and Crescendo.
That's dope.
So let me go down the points. So Shadow Seer dropped 9 points. The Skyweavers that I was just talking about dropped 5 points. They're now 30 points a model. The Solitaire dropped 10 points to 84. The troop, the troop models, the players, the random, or I shouldn't say the random, but the base rank and file guys in the Harlequin army are down by 2 points. And so now they're 13 points each. The troop master went up 11 points and he is now 70 points.
Isn't there also, like, there's a 2 command point stratagem where you can buff that guy to be, like, the super-duper trooper master?
Yeah, you make him the Great Harlequin, and,
also known as Troop Smash.
He does better stuff.
but he gives a reroll, I think. It's like reroll ones to hit or something in an aura.
The Haywire Cannon went up 1 point. It's now 15 points. We'll read the rules on that in just a couple of minutes. The Webway Gate, which has gotten a lot of interest, is 120 points. It's a piece of terrain. We'll go into what potentially you could do with that. But that is kind of a hefty price point, if you ask me. But you can do some crafty things with it. For the weapons.
Crafty.
Yeah.
Is that an Eldar pun? Crafty world?
Maybe it'll turn into one. But we mentioned the Haywire Cannon, the Harlequin Blade. So the troop dudes come with a shuriken pistol and a Harlequin Blade and plasma grenades. So the Harlequin Blade used to be 1 point. Now it is down to 0 points.
With all the different, you know, decreases in points across the board, it seems like you can fit like almost a whole nother something somewhere or kit out things just a little bit more diverse. And I think that that's going to help this book overall in the grand scheme of things.
Any troop guy can take a fusion pistol. That's 9 points apiece. So the plasma grenades, the shuriken pistol and the Harlequin Blade are all 0 points. And then you can kind of choose to upgrade them from there if you want. But with the hollow suit, everybody has a 4+ invulnerable save. The flip belt lets them move across terrain as if it didn't exist. Models in this unit can advance with a rising crescendo and still charge. 8-inch.
Would you say that these guys have a pretty strong assault presence in the first turn? They can cover a lot of ground in the first turn?
They can cover a lot of ground. Do you think that they're a threat? They have 4 attacks apiece, so that's the same as it is in the index. But they're only strength 3, and that's a little bit of a problem. You can equip them with the Harlequin's Caress, and that gives them +2 strength, -2 AP. So that in itself is pretty strong, but the Harlequin's Caress is 7 points a model. Now, that's down 2 points, so it is cheaper than it used to be, but when you start, I mean, you think you put a squad of 10 in there, give them all caresses, and then they're 70, that's an extra 70 points.
Yeah, you're going to have to find the balance, that's for sure. I mean, you need 2 or 3, in my opinion.
The Kiss, the Harlequin's Kiss, is down 7 points, so it's half price from what it was in the index. I still think the Caress is probably better. To get that extra strength, the Harlequin's Kiss.
Yeah, strength 5.
It does D3 damage as opposed to 1, but it's only -1 AP and only +1 strength. So you're put you up to strength 4, but otherwise, you know, strength 5 opens up is like the, in my opinion, like one of the gateway numbers. To kind of open up a lot of things wounded on 3s.
Well, when you get to a certain point, right, when you get to strength 4, the majority of vehicles you're going to be wounding on 5s, and that doesn't change when you go up to strength 5. So in that situation, like the D3 damage almost sounds more appealing, except when you remember that even the wimpiest Dark Eldar vehicle has a 3+ armor save. Yeah. So, I mean, you're The minus two AP, I feel like, is going to turn over to more damage than the minus one with D3 damage just by virtue of the dice.
Yeah, so what's that mix? I mean, I don't know. If you do have a squad of 10, actually, you can have up to a squad of 12. I shouldn't say 10. You can have 12, dude. It starts to come to base 5. You can include up to 7 additional players. But you'll have to, I think some testing will probably determine what is the real number of caresses you need in that unit.
Well, and if I remember correctly, each one of these guys has that 4-up invulnerable save.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So for the price you're paying for the base cost of these models, even with their base war gear, with a 4-up invulnerable save, with that kind of movement, I mean, I think there's definitely some play there. And I am interested in seeing how it turns out. Probably the most curious thing about this for me is the bikes. Basically, they're pseudo vipers.
Well, you talking about the Skyweavers or the ones that are the vehicle? You talking about the dudes on two guys on a jet bike?
Kind of both, basically. I've never seen anyone put the jet bikes on the table, when it came out.
And they were really good. I shouldn't say really good. They were required for the Harlequin formations in 7th edition. So that's why you saw them. But that was the only reason you saw them. They've gotten, said, a little bit of a price break. They're down 5 points apiece. And they have the Rising Crescendo, which, you know, we said can still charge after you assault. After you advance, and they've got the Blur of Color. When this unit advances, add 6 to its move characteristic for that movement phase instead of rolling a dice. So they have a movement of 16 plus the 6. So that's a 22-inch move that they can then still launch an assault because of their Rising Crescendo.
Yeah, I think these dudes are going to be a mainstay in a lot of armies.
And they have the Mirage Launchers, which they're minus 1 to hit in the shooting phase.
These are great.
Yeah, quick, durable, well, hit good. I like them.
There are a lot of points. You know, comparatively, they do have the 4+ invulnerable save, though. So these things have 3 wounds apiece. With the Skyweavers, they're, you know, like we mentioned, they're 30 points apiece, down 5 from what they were in the index. So with 3 wounds apiece, like the point per wound ratio is actually pretty darn good. And the fact they also get they have the holosuit, which gives them the 4+ invulnerable save and -1 to hit. So I think they're actually pretty survivable.
Well, 3 wounds is kind of a nice number. There's the only thing that comes to mind that readily does 3 damage, off the top of my head, is either like a missile or a close combat attack from a dreadnought, or maybe an overcharged plasma thing. So
it comes standard with a Star Bolas, which is a grenade weapon, grenade 3.
Look at the range. Yeah, say the range.
12-inch range. 12-inch, so it's, you know.
I'm just excited to see a grenade with a 12-inch range.
Yeah, like a left fielder for Harlequin.
String 6.
Give a Space Marine Reaver a 12-inch range on a grenade, and I'd lose my mind. But no, these Skyweavers
get it. Especially those blind grenades. Huh?
Yeah.
2 damage apiece. The grenades do not stink. And then you can replace the Star Bolas with the Zephyr Glaive, which is +1 strength. It's a melee weapon, though.
So the Star Bolas went up to 2 damage.
Yeah, 2 damage apiece.
Oh, they were 1 in the index. So that's huge. Still D3 attacks? Strength 6 AP -3?
Yep.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
These dudes are baller, man. I really like these.
Change, though. The index, whatever they are point-wise in the index, that is what they are now as well. So that's pretty cool. They get an upgrade.
Yeah. And like Chris was saying, you know, like with the wounds, 3 wounds on these, you know, I'm thinking to try to pop them Hellblasters, Dark Angels Hellblasters, supercharged with Weapons of the Dark Age, but then the Mirage Launchers causing that -1 to hit, all of a sudden supercharged weapons become much scarier. So
the Star Bullets are 0 points also. I don't know if that makes you... Yeah. They were 0 in the index, I believe, too.
Oh, okay.
They're definitely 0 points now.
These dudes are massive board threat harassers with those Star Bolas.
I demand a refund on those points.
Yeah, I mean, just think about how super quick they can be. They're tossing those bolas around left and right. I mean, if you have to assault, you have to assault. But, like, I don't think that you want to be assaulting with them. I think the bolas are going to be your...
But the thing is, if you're locking down, I mean, if you're locking down a tank line or whatever, then, yeah, you assault.
Oh, well, yeah, touche. Yeah.
And we're still only throwing 1 bola, though, is the thing. So.
Well, D3.
Well, no, I mean, like, the squad. The squad is only, it's grenades, so we're, we're making the one attack.
One guy gets to toss, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the squad size of this? Is it 1 to 3, or?
You can have, it's 2 to 4.
Okay, I like that.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's actually larger than that. It can, if the unit contains two Skyweavers, it can include up to two additional Skyreavers or up to four additional Skyreavers. So I guess that would mean up to six.
Nice.
Okay, they could have worded that a little bit cleaner, but yeah.
It works in the power level. Like,
yeah, the power level wording makes that a little heavy-handed there, I guess. And we haven't got to it yet, but when we do to the psychic powers with Veil of Tears.
Hang on, we're getting there.
It doesn't matter.
The Haywire Cannon on this thing, this is the first time we've gotten to it, is the Haywire Cannon. If the target is a vehicle and you roll to roll a wound roll of 4+ for this weapon, the target suffers one mortal wound in addition to any other damage. If the wound roll is a 6+, the target suffers D3 mortal wounds. Now, the thing is only strength 4. So that means you're going to need a roll higher than 4 to wound a lot of vehicles. But if you get a 4 or better, you're doing damage to the vehicle. And it's assault D6.
I have a love-hate relationship with D6 shots weapons because I always roll the 1s on those kinds of weapons.
Yeah, I spend so many command points on those. But that went from heavy D3 to heavy D6.
Six.
I will take that.
Yeah, it went up by 1 point.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I want it at one extra point for twice the shots. Unless you're Chris, and then you get, you know.
Always one shot. It's always. Yeah. But I like the fact that.
I can own that.
Assault D6. I mean, let's just say you get 3 hits. Then you're probably going to get a handful of mortal wounds out of that.
Dude, and it's assault. It was heavy in the index. Wow, so it goes to assault D6. These guys are moving. So these guys are just going to ride around at 22 inches all day shooting these Haywire cannons. It's
any model can replace their Shuriken cannon with a Haywire cannon.
I don't hate that at all.
It's a lot of points. You know, you're adding up points when you do that. But you do, I mean, you're creating a pretty multi-purpose unit. I mean, it is assault D6, 24-inch range. So you could technically zip 22 inches away to fire the 24-inch weapon.
It's a pretty decent threat range, really.
I mean, you got, let's see here, 46-inch threat range with that. With that model,
it's -1 AP, so you could, and with the assault D6, you could technically target troops as well, but you're only going to get the mortal wounds if you're targeting a vehicle.
Yeah, but even, you know, it's versatile. I like
lots of things
it's,
with vehicles too, like Dreadnought Grandmasters. Make them use that true silver armor.
I like those. I love the speed and the fact that they can threaten vehicles with that much speed.
The Void Weaver and the Star Weaver, those are the Viper looking things. Those are the Viper and the Venom type chassis. I mean, they're not the exact same, but they have that kind of same body style. They also get the Mirage Launchers, which makes them -1 to hit in the shooting phase. 6 wounds apiece, they don't degrade. The Void Weaver can get the Haywire Cannon as well.
You know, a theme that I don't think anybody's really picked up on is Harlequins have always been known for being kind of soft. There's a lot of like subtle defensive increases across the board with these -1 hits here and stuff like that.
It's the same way with the Dark Eldar. It used to be flying around in paper airplanes, but now, good luck.
Yeah, those paper airplanes have storm shields glued all over them.
And that's the thing, in 8th edition, when, you know, so much stuff has -1, -2 AP, all of a sudden, here's like, oh, these guys only have a 4-up invulnerable save. Okay, you know, in 7th edition, that would have been like, oh, okay, it's a 4-up. But in 8th edition, 4-up is solid because you can be running around with powered armored marines, and that 3-up save against -1, -2 AP all of a sudden doesn't hold a candle to a 4-up invul because you don't care about AP at that point. So yeah, they're just as susceptible. Yeah, they're just as susceptible to aggressors and stuff like that. Aggressors will shoot these guys off the table. But, you know, they're not nearly as scared of plasma weaponry as any other army.
Or a last cannon or a missile.
Yeah. You shot a last cannon. Guess what? My save's exactly the same. So that with the -1 to hit on all this stuff, they're deceptively tankier than people at first glance would assume.
The Star Weaver is their transport, and it's open topped also, and it like this the other bikes, it has that blur of color. So the Void Weaver and the Star Weaver both have the blur of color, which adds 6 to their move characteristic. You don't have to roll to advance.
That's huge for transport.
Well, that's given a 22-inch range.
Yeah, an open-top transport at that.
Yeah. Yeah, so due to their rising crescendo ability, the passengers can shoot if this model falls back. So you can shoot out of it, and they can still use their ability, the rising crescendo, to shoot, even if the transport falls back.
I like it.
It says that specifically in the rule. I'm not even inferring that.
It's just very flexible.
On the Void Weaver, I know we're jumping back between the two, but these are the things. You could build either one of them out of the kit. You can have the prismatic cannon be an option. And it says when attacking with this weapon, choose one of the following profiles below. It's a 24-inch weapon. Again, we've determined that's not that big of a deal. All these profiles are assault. The dispersed is assault D6, strength 4, neg 2 AP, 1 damage apiece. I like the neg 2 AP on that. The focused is assault D3, strength 6, neg 3 AP, D3 damage. And then the lance is assault 1, strength 8, neg 4 AP, D6 damage.
It's basically like a fire prism cannon.
Yeah.
A mini fire prism cannon. You know, the D6, the strength 8, the neg 4 AP is pretty good there. That does make it a category above better than the last cannon. Well, other than the fact that it's on a vehicle and as assault and, you know, whatever.
I mean, turning that gun from heavy to assault, and they went through from Index to Codex and changed all the weapons that should have been assault. Like, why in the world would Harlequins be rocking heavy weapons, you know, and every one of them have switched over to assault so that this army can stay super mobile. And that's awesome. And I love the versatility on that gun. And yeah, minus 2 on the weakest, on the dispersed, is going to cut through some infantry real quick.
Yeah, I think so for sure. So now let's talk about, you want to talk about the psychic powers, and we can. So the Shadow Seer, who did get a little bit cheaper, he's down 9 points. Now, I know we're talking about 9 points here, 5 points there, 2 points there, but like Justin pointed out a few minutes ago, they all add up to like an additional troop dude, an additional player in your troop squads, or, you know, maybe you do afford the extra points for the Haywire Cannons on every single one of the Skyweavers or something, you know, who knows, but it's there. So the Shadow Seer, he has a rising crescendo, has the flip belt, and he has an ability called the Shield from Harm. Your opponent must subtract 1 from wound rolls for any attacks made against friendly mask infantry units that are within 6 inches of any models with this ability.
Okay, so the mask part makes it a little bit specific.
Well, that's your faction. So, you know, anybody who's of the same faction as this guy in this detachment, which you're probably going to have anyway, your opponent must subtract 1 from wound rolls made for any attacks made against friendly mask infantry units that are within 6 inches of any models with this ability.
Well, with the masks, like if you had 2 Harlequin detachments, it would only benefit the one that this one's in, though, right?
Correct.
Well, the one that shared his mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I, so okay, that's what I was meaning. If you had
multiple detachments and they all shared the same mask, it would still affect.
But okay.
If they were different chapter tactics, for lack of a better term, then it wouldn't work. He has the Rage Crescendo, he's got the 4+ invulnerable save. The model can attempt to manifest 2 psychic powers and attempt to deny 1 psychic power. And those the Smite and 2 psychic powers from the Phantasmancy discipline.
Say that again for me one more time.
I was saying it like I had my microphone muted, and I was just sitting here saying it out loud, trying to figure out the best way to pronounce that. And I don't think I'm much closer than you are.
I add another A in there. It's the Phantasmancy.
Yeah, Phantasmancy.
Phantasmancy. The fanciest mancy.
The fanciest mancy. That's what it is.
It is fancy.
Getting posh over here.
They get a warp time. Now, we'd heard, you know, rumors about a warp time, but it pretty much works the exact same way as warp time. Twilight Pathways has a warp charge value of 6. Does that sound familiar? If manifest is selected friendly Harlequin's unit within 3 inches of the Psyker, invisible to it, the unit can immediately move as if it were the movement phase. You can't use this on a unit more than once in each Psyche phase. And of course, that's in there for open and near to play stuff.
So moves if it's movement. So let's see here. I'm just trying to think a troop there. So that would be, moving a troop would be what? 8, so 16 plus 2d6. No, 2d6, right? Because we moved during the movement. We advanced during the movement phase now.
Well,
so,
right. What I'm saying is, oh, you're talking about total movement. I'm saying you would move them and advance them in the movement phase.
Yes.
The same with the Shadow Seer also, because he has the same movement. He can keep up with these guys.
That'd be pretty good to move a troop, what, 8 plus 2d6 inches across the table.
I don't move that much, I assure you.
Well, I mean, think about it this way. You know, they are.
Glad you're embracing this, Jason.
That's eight. What is that? I mean, you're looking at 22 inches of movement on average.
Yeah.
From a psychotic space clown elf.
Well, a unit of 12 dudes with four attacks apiece. If we're just talking about a troop, or, you know, or it's 1,000 of those bikes.
Yeah, but yeah, the bikes, like the bikes need to be faster. But yes, they can do it because it's not just infantry; it's any Harlequin's unit. No. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm saying.
I mean, but the bikes moving faster. They don't. I mean, they have a lot of movement on their own.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're stupid fast as it is already, so they're great. I'm just thinking, like, a troop right on your front line is turn one. If somebody puts their infantry right up on the line, a troop can get there and charge turn one.
Well, let me talk about, like, some serious combo stuff if you wanted to do something here. They also have a psychic power called the Fog of Dreams. The Fog of Dreams has a warp charge value of 6. It manifests to select an enemy unit within 18 inches of the psyker invisible to it. So remember, you've already moved up. Now this is just the Shadow Seer himself. He has moved and advanced 8 plus d6 inches, so he's, you know, 11 inches closer to the. So he's got a pretty. This thing has an average of 29 inch threat range.
Let's give that a solid ish.
So until the start of your next psychic phase, your opponent must subtract 1 from hit rolls that for that unit that target Harlequin infantry units. So that's anybody they choose to shoot at in your army for the most part. Other than the vehicles that we've talked about, they are -1 to hit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm checking the Skyweavers now. They are not infantry. They are biker, fly, and Skyweavers. They are not infantry. But there's a stratagem called Lightning Fast Reactions. Use this stratagem when a Harlequin unit from your army is targeted by a ranged or melee weapon. Subtract 1 from all hit rolls made against that unit for the rest of the phase. That's 2 command points. So if you pushed up a unit, you know, far up in, you know, into the, you're wanting to get a charge, or you know they're going to be really much in harm's way, you put this Fog of Dreams on whatever you think the worst unit is, because it's not shooting rolls, it's all hit rolls. And then if you really want to protect that unit, you do the Lightning Fast Reactions, and so that unit is -2 to hit.
And then if we want to go completely bonkers, Veil of Tears.
Veloteers, yeah, that is a warp charge value of 7. It manifests as like a friendly Harlequin infantry unit within 18 inches. The unit of the next psychic phase subtract 1 from hit rolls for attacks made against that unit. So that's potential -3 to hit on 1 unit of Harlequins.
It just sounds so annoying.
Yeah. This game is stupid.
Think about this, -3 to hit, and then you take the Twisted Path, which has the ability that you roll a die. And whatever, it's like the Tzeentch ability, so whatever number that is, whatever, if they roll that to hit, it misses.
Right. It's like they roll 2d6, ignore the highest one, and whatever to hit rolls match the number get tossed.
Yeah, I think that's, you could, you know, the risk is that you put that 12-man unit of whatever up into the enemy's grill, and then they just pick them apart.
Shoot everything else.
You kill one unit and they pick them apart. You know, this, you're paying a lot. Like, it's 2 psychic powers, and then a 2 command point stratagem. But you've, with a 4+ invulnerable save, you've pretty much made that unit immortal.
There's also a stratagem in there that you can turn that 4 up into a 3 up.
The invulnerable save itself?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you basically made that unit nigh unkillable for
a
turn.
And then don't forget, if the Shadow Seer's there, they got to subtract 1 from the wound roll as well. So, how did Harlequins become the toughest army in 40K?
He's just weeping.
He's probably out of range at that point if you've moved him up, you know, but he might not be.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, this, what I was talking about was this Isha's Weeping stratagem. Use this stratagem at the end of any phase. Select a Harlequin's unit from your army that suffered casualties during the phase. Improve that unit's invulnerable save by 1 to a maximum of 3+ until the end of the turn.
I got it. So, let's say they take a smite wound in the psychic phase, and then you pop that on them to the end of the turn.
Or say you lose a dude to Overwatch. Now you've got a 3 up in combat.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
And that's 1 command point, so... I mean, this army sounds like super frustrating. And I think what you're talking about, Paul, what you said just there, the immortal wounds like smite, that's going to be the biggest way to deal with all of these shenanigans, is having mortal wound potential that doesn't require it to hit roll.
Yeah, you're probably right. There is a mortal wound generator in the psychic tree, the fancy Phantasmancy. It's the Mirror of the Minds, has a warp charge value of 7. If manifested, select an enemy unit within 24 inches of the Psyker. Then both players roll a d6. If the Harlequin player roll is equal to or higher than their opponent's, then the target unit suffers 1 mortal wound. Repeat this process until the target is destroyed or the enemy player rolls a result that is higher than the Harlequin's player roll.
You know, I think I'd rather just smite, but I mean, if you're feeling really lucky, which Chris, don't cast this.
Well, it depends on how many dudes you got to kill, right? I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're probably right. D3 mortal wounds is I typically try to stay away from powers that you have to cast and then roll some extra stuff for.
Yeah. But this you can pick. You can pick the unit. It's not just the closest. So yeah. So you could snipe out, yeah, you could potentially snipe out, you know, some smaller characters or something.
I like that just from a design element, I like that it has 24 inches and it's not another 18 inch power. So you actually do have to make a choice whether or not you smite or do this.
Yeah, I specifically love when the psychic powers are longer range, like on the debuffs and stuff too, because a lot of times these psychers are a little bit frail. And that way it gives you that little extra, you know, I could sneak my head around the corner and not worry about getting punched in the throat.
Yeah, I like this. This book has, I mean, it's a smaller book. It has fewer pages than some of the other codexes that have been out. It's very similar to the Death Watch because it's a sub-faction. But there's a lot packed in here. I mean, I think I think this is a viable option to play. Now, I haven't built a full army yet. I don't know what the full impact of reduced cost, I mean, other than more models, right? But what does that really translate to? Does it translate into more options, more ways to tactically complete objectives in a tournament, or does it just mean I get a few extra troop guys? You know, that is yet to be seen.
Well, luckily in 2016, my year-long hobby challenge to myself was paint a full Harlequin's army, and I didn't accomplish that. But I get to try again now.
That's right. Just try one more time.
It's not a forgiving army when it comes to like painting. If you're an impatient person, much like myself, you know, you really want to do the army justice. These sculpts are fantastic. And, you know, when you start doing some of those like diamonds and stuff, if you don't have like an easy go-to for diamond work, you're going to literally just want to like smash your head against your desk.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me at least.
No, I can see that.
These are the only Eldar that I've ever really like really wanted to play. And every time I look at all of the diamonds on the legs and stuff, I'm like, you know, I'm good with power armor.
You don't have to be diamonds. Sometimes your diamonds can turn into checks. And no one knows the difference. Before we get to a little bit too off topic, I want to talk about the warlord traits, or at least one specific warlord trait. There is a warlord trait called Player of the Light. Reroll failed charges made for your warlord and any friendly mass units whilst they are within 6 inches of your warlord. So your warlord, probably going to be somebody that can keep up with everybody, and they're rerolling charges. So
I like that on the solitaire.
Well, the solitaire cannot take warlord traits.
I don't like that on the solitaire.
Yeah. The solitaire is, he's a beast. I think his rules changed slightly. The blitzman, he has 8 base attacks. Did he have 8 base attacks before?
Yeah.
Okay, then it didn't. I thought he had a one less base attack. But it's still with the blitz, at 2d6 to its move characteristic. And in addition, the attack characteristic is increased to 10 until the end of the turn. And this ability may not be used if the model has been selected as a target for the Twilight Pathway psychic power. I guess he's just too fast. The solitaire, on the other hand, does have a 3+ invulnerable save. I think that's the same also.
Yeah.
But he has the Path of Damnation. The solitaire can never have a warlord trait.
Dang. Well, I mean, I guess that's probably for the best. He is a beast and definitely well costed on points.
He can only come with the Caress and the Kiss. But as we mentioned, those did get a points decrease. Like the Kiss is down 7 points and the Caress is down 2 points. So the solitaire himself got a point decrease. So he's now, he went down from 94 to 84, and you're saving an additional 9 points on the weapons themselves. So he got, you know, a pretty significant decrease. Like he got almost a full Haywire Cannon's worth of points.
Right? Yeah. That adds up, man. And honestly, like, anybody that's ever been hit by this guy knows, like, holy cow, dude's a freight train.
Yeah, he got more than, the Haywire Cannon is 15 total points, so he got more than that. He's down 19 points total.
Yeah, that's a dude with a caress.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. And the fact that I think he's an auto-include, if you're taking Harlequins, I think he's an auto-include. Because the dude, he moves across models and terrain as if they weren't there. He can get that extra. His movement base characteristic is 12. So he could potentially move himself 24 inches just running. And then when he hits strength 5 with a kit with a caress, -2 AP.
Yeah, dude, it's just so much damage.
Yeah, 3+.
I love it.
I've run him into Magnus before. Like,
oh, wow.
Now, I didn't kill Magnus, but the odds were in my favor. It just didn't work out. But I like that you can run him into other trucks. I mean, what's Magnus going to do? What's a knight going to do? You know, a knight's probably going to try to swing his big weapon at you because you've got 5 wounds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Titanic Feat is probably always the best option, no matter what.
It is.
But I can see how the temptation would be there to try to close him out. You got 3+ invulnerable save. You're not scared of anybody with less than 10 attacks.
He's scary. I mean, is he going to like win the game for you by himself? No.
Well, he's a character. You can't target him until he becomes the closest model. Which he will because...
He's going to do quickly.
He'll already be punching you when that happens.
Yeah,
like... He could really shut down, get in on somebody's flank and just shut down a whole unit, or there's so many ways I could see using him.
I think my biggest thing that I like about him, especially in like kind of how the game is, with screens and stuff, if somebody tries to tie him down, bad idea, with the 8 attacks and stuff, he's going to get out of your screen soon.
Yeah, too. And he can fall back and charge still.
Right.
And by fall back, we mean fall forward.
Yeah, fall.
Hit the screen. What he doesn't kill, he bounces over and then ties up all your tanks that you were trying to screen. The dude's awesome.
I like him a lot better than the Death Jester, but the Death Jester did just get that big points decrease. So he is double the points of a Death Jester now. But I still think he's worth it.
Yeah. 2 Death Jesters, 1 Solitaire. Han Solo comes out in 2 weeks. I'm going with Solitaire.
I like that that logic thread. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. I mean, however I have to rationalize life, that's what I do.
It's
like
having a squirrel on the podcast, but I agree with that, little squirrel. Good for you, buddy.
I just run circles in my cage.
Well, let's talk about that Webway gate. It is 120 points, and it has toughness 8, 14 wounds, 3+ save. The Webway Gate is a single model formed from 2 separate pieces. So those 2 spires are separate things. When setting setting up these pieces, place them so that they form an arch, with the bases 5 inches apart. So they have some instructions on how to actually, you make the gate look like it's supposed to look and whatever, because things are going to come through it. A shimmering arrival. When you set up this model during deployment, it can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 12 inches from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy models, and more than 3 inches from any other terrain feature or the center of any objective marker. Again, a lot of rules on how to even get this thing on the table.
Yeah, but I'm actually okay with this because... It eliminates questions later.
Yeah, I agree with that. And yep. I don't like it when it's too easy to game your opponent in the pre-game, essentially. So I like the fact that it calls out, don't be trying to put this next one in an objective marker or automatically scoring an objective marker.
Right.
Has a 5+ invulnerable save. It is immobile, and which you could probably tell it was immobile, but enemy units automatically hit it in the fight phase. So take that.
Yeah, easy to destroy then.
I'm okay with it. I mean, it ain't going to dodge.
Yeah, probably not. The Webway Strike. After you set up this model, any Eldari units you have not yet set up during deployment, other than fortifications, can be set up in the Webway spar rather than being set up on the battlefield. One unit in a Webway spar can emerge from each friendly Webway gate at the end of each of your movement phases. Set them up wholly within 3 inches of the Webway gate and more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. If all friendly Webway gates have been destroyed, any units that have not yet arrived from a Webway spar are considered to be slain. Now, we know there's a stratagem that lets you bring them out. And you can bring out one unit, and you can actually bring it out even if it's next to an enemy model. It's not overpowered because you're typically going to be bringing it out in their phase, so they could potentially still interact with it in some way. But at least you do get to, if it is destroyed, do something with it. Then it has the Webway Gate. When measuring distances to and from a Webway Gate, measure from the closest point on the model. If a Webway Gate is destroyed, remove both arc pieces from the battlefield. I think for Harlequins, they don't need the gate.
Yeah, they're so fast already.
Yeah, I mean, I can see, well, the gate looks cool,
It does.
Let me just say that. So I'm getting one. But I don't see myself wanting to bring out the Harlequins through this. But it does work for any Eldari units. So that's so your Craft World. That's your Dark Eldar.
Your close combat Wraith Knight.
Your
coming out of this thing.
I'm going to assume the Taloses.
Yeah. Well, you know, now that you say that, if that works, I like this thing a little bit more.
Well, it's got a hefty point price tag. I think that's how it and it has to factor in. Is your strategy with that unit worth the points of the unit and the points of the webway? And then what happens to your strategy if the webway gets destroyed?
Yeah, and in my opinion, I'm gonna say Harlequins now, but all the elf space versions now are really point efficient across the board and in most cases for what you will be taking. And I think that just that 120 points factored into, like you said, the cost of the unit as well. I can't justify that, because now I feel like they're suffering like the Marines. You know, why am I spending 85 points on a Rhino and stuff like that?
Well, and as we've seen, Rhinos have, I mean, there are places for that kind of stuff. And so that's, but I think that's the decision you have to make. Like, is this point investment worth it to my strategy? And sometimes the answer is going to be yes. Like, we have seen Rhinos be used. Like, they do get used.
I think a better comparison would be to a drop pod, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, so it's whatever. You need to consider this part of the purchase of the unit you're going to use it for. And that's where it has to factor in, because this doesn't like suck units into it and destroy them or anything. This is only a delivery mechanism for some of your units. And I think you've really got to make a real decision on are those points worth it for your overall purchase. And you can't look at them as two separate purchases. That's the only point I'm trying to make.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with you there. There's so many factors. You can't look at that piece of terrain in a vacuum. It's there's so many factors about your army. Just the ability to, for one thing, just the ability to keep one of your really high value units off the table until your turn that you bring it in. That alone may be worth 120 points, because as we all know, in 8th edition, your favorite model is probably coming off the table turn one. So, you know, this can protect that long enough to bring it out.
Well, you know, it works for vehicles too. You know, it could, you know, I actually got asked this question on Twitter, is an Eldar Wraith army viable? And my answer was, the Wraith Guard are underutilized in Rock. Wave Serpents are great. And the Wraith Knight is a little unwieldy, in my opinion. Does this make things like the Wraith Knight better?
It's going to get there. I think it's going to be able to get there faster. You know, if you put it up closer, you're going to be able to get the Wraith units into combat maybe a little easier.
Yeah, I just think that the fact that the webway strike, you still have to come out within you still have to be within 9 inches of, or outside of 9 inches from an enemy. I think it's kind of gameable by your opponent. I don't know. I think you got to really, there's a lot. You have to really be careful with this thing in both the armyless design and on the table.
Yeah. And we said there's the stratagem, right? That you can bring them out closer if they get too close.
Yeah. Well, if they destroy the webway gate, there's a stratagem that allows you to deploy.
So it's got to be destroyed.
But they can come out closer to the enemy in that case.
It's almost like you're, I don't know. Me personally, it's like the strategy, like where's your strategy at that doesn't just somehow involve your opponent forgetting the two big giant terrain pieces staring them in the face as they move their models, well, you know?
The Labyrinth Laughs, that's the name of the stratagem. It's a one command point stratagem. Use this stratagem when a webway gate from your army is destroyed, but before you remove the model from the battlefield. Immediately set up one of your Eldari unit from your army that has been not yet deployed from the webway, wholly within 3 inches of the webway gate and more than 1 inch away from the enemy model. And then remove the webway.
Yeah, so basically just like deploying from a destroyed transport, essentially, is what. So
needed a drop pod for your Wraith Knight.
There you go.
This is what you do.
There you go.
The answer was yes. I think the Wraith Guard are underutilized. And this might even be something cool for the Wraith Guard. You know, coming out and charging with the axes or something.
It could be intimidating. It could certainly be intimidating to know that you have a unit of Wraith Guard in that webway and that webway gate sitting like right in the middle of the table, it's definitely going to shift where I move my army. I'm not going to get close to it, right?
So well, the thing that has going for it is that there's no size, there's no unit size restriction. It's not like four Wraith Guard are the only thing they're going to fit in a wave. I shouldn't say four. Four is a bad example. But the Wave Serpent is awesome, and it also transports these things, but it has a capacity, a transport capacity.
Right.
The Webway Portal does not. The Webway Gate does not.
Right. So, like, you know, the biggest blob of something you can coming out of that thing, that's pretty cool to be able to do.
I think so. And again, you take vehicles through it too.
And they can't disembark once they're out of the vehicle, right?
The vehicle was still kind of moved.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So that is, yeah, because it still has to come out.
Right. I just keep trying to think of some way to make it super awesome. But in the end, I think it's just, okay, it's neat.
Well, I think that our first glance at this stuff or at this thing, I don't know if we're completely factoring in everything that you could possibly do for it. But, you know, when you look at it's any Eldari unit and like a Wave Serpent with a bunch of stuff in it is an Eldari. You know, you could potentially walk out Dark Reapers, a 12-man unit of Dark, or sorry, 10-man unit of Dark Reapers out of this thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of stuff you can do if you're trying, especially if you're trying to set up multi-layered threats. Again, this is just, it's possible if you, there are things you can do. And I think the thing that we haven't highlighted enough is again, that it can, you can put vehicles through it. You can put Wraith Knights through it. You could put lots of stuff that is not able to be hidden from being shot at turn one normally.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be one of its biggest values is protecting your units from that turn one alpha strike of deleting your heavy hitter right off the table before you get to use it. I think that's going to be one of the best uses for it. Just spitballing right now.
Yeah. I'm real happy for this codex. I think that next week we'll probably get into the stratagems and more warlord traits and an army list. I think this is a solid addition to what we have right now. And it looks like they really did go over this and gave it some 8th edition love after the index. I said with things being heavy weapons have been turned to assault.
Yeah.
And getting all the, you know, the six different masks all getting their own traits. And those are up on the Warhammer community site too right now. But I think there's not just one that's automatically better than the rest. I think there are a couple of them that are contenders for things you might want to do.
That's always one of my favorite metrics for a good codex or not is are all of the, you know, quote unquote chapter tactics, are they equal or are they close, you know, because there's nothing worse than, you know, getting your codex and the chapter tactic or the house or whatever you love and play has a crappy rule. That's just like, well, maybe next time. So
well,
anytime
I mean,
I can hear that, I'm
if
happy.
We can kind of go over a few of them, I'll tell you why I like them.
Let's do it.
All right. It's the art, the Midnight Sorrow. So the next line is the Art of Death. Units with this form can move an additional D6 when they fall back. In addition, units with this form can consolidate up to 6 inches instead of 3.
Ooh, both of those are great.
We talk about that, and that's one rule. They get both of those. It's not an and/or kind of thing. We talk about like this the movement metric of how long does it take you to get someplace, and how does your opponent plan, like in their mind they feel comfortable what a 3-inch consolidate is. Sometimes it still stinks up on you. Mm-hmm. This radically changes that. This is now, we talked about 8-inch move with a D6 advance, and you know, and now and then to get into combat with the warp time. Sorry, the veiled path, whatever it is, the twilight pathways, I think is what it was called.
We've talked about so many rules, I can't even remember.
Yeah, the one, the extra movement fate, you know,
right,
extra
yeah,
movement
yeah.
round. So then, I mean, that is a bazillion inches.
And I think we really got a quick call on this fallback because let's be honest, we're running all solitaires all day and we're falling forward. So we're falling forward, we're going over their lines, and we're doing a D6 additional move.
Well,
your back lines are not
the,
not
the 6-inch consolidate, you know, like Justin mentioned earlier, the screens. So yeah, you put a screen up, but now I'm going to hit that screen. And so how in your movement phase, how far away from that screen can you be? Can you be, it's not even 6 inches. You hit, pile in, and then you consolidate. It's crazy.
And what does everybody do? Everybody out of habit. What do we do? I want to make sure all my screens are 3.1 inches from my front line, right? And so that way you can't pile in and lock me in again, right? We always make sure we're just far enough out to where you don't make that. And so if you catch somebody sleeping on that, you can lock up their next rank.
Absolutely, man. That is crazy if you ask me.
Yeah. I would say listening to that tactic for like if you want to step up your competitive game, like just listen to that one tactic and try to apply it as much as you can.
Now remember the pile-in at the first part of the combat is a pile-in. It's not a consolidate. Consolidate is at the end of the phase. So it's not a pile-in, a pile-in. It's a specific pile-in and then a consolidate. So you're only getting that 6-inch move at the end of the phase. But that is still, you know, you move up, you charge, you pile in 3 inches. Then you consolidate 6 inches. That's a free 9-inch movement that these guys just got.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I like it.
So I like that. That's what I'm saying. That's a winner, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So the Veiled Path, those are the Riddlesmiths. At the start of each fight phase, roll 2 dice and discard the highest roll until the end of the phase. Each time your opponent targets a unit with this form and makes a hit roll that, before modifiers, exactly matches your dice result, their hit roll fails. So there's value there, you ask me. Frozen Stars, the Hysterical Fury. If a unit with this form charges in the charge phase, add 1 to their attack characteristics until the end of the ensuing fight phase.
Ah, crap. I like that one a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's instant value. You're going to be fighting anyway, so might as well be fighting more.
Yeah. If you're running like a bunch of like just big troops, that's going to pay off a lot.
The Soaring Spite, models with this form that can fly or that are embarked upon a transport that can fly, treat all pistol weapons they are equipped with as assault 1 during the turn in which they advanced.
That's cool too.
Yeah. In addition, these models do not suffer the penalty to their hit rolls for shooting assault weapons during the turn in which they advance.
That's even cooler. they could have just given us that. That would have been great.
I mean, we were just talking about, you know, all this stuff, you know, all the vehicle stuff
that right there, if you're going with like more of a jet bike army, you know, Skyweavers, Voidweavers, and you're not taking that, then I think you're Warhammering wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but there's all, I mean, everything we talked about so far, I think, is playable.
Yeah. Oh, they're all playable, but like if 1500 points of my army is, you know, jet bikes, guess which one old Ricky's taking.
Yeah. So and then here's the Dreaming Shadow. When a unit with this form fails a morale test, only one model on the unit must flee. In addition, each time a model with this form is slain or flees, roll a d6 before removing the model. On a 4+, the model can either shoot with one of its range weapons, or if it was the shooting phase, or make a single attack in the as if it were the fight phase.
Pretty cool. It's like having a chapter, the banner there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think, you're going to be up there taking casualties. You know, if let's say your plan of making them -3 to hit doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just, you know, it's like just having Grim Resolve on them. You only lose one. So that right there is great, especially when you have expensive models in a unit. You know, if you've got this six man unit of Skyweavers with Haywire cannons and you totally bomb your morale test, well, you only lose one, so that is really nice. And you got a 50-50 shot of that one still getting to shoot.
The Silent Shroud, the Dance of Nightmares Made Flesh.
Oh, that. I would buy that album.
Subtract 1 from the leadership characteristic of any of enemy units while they're within 6 inches of any units from your army with this form. In addition, whenever your opponent takes a morale test for a unit that is within 6 inches of any unit from this army with this form, they must roll 2 dice and discard the lowest. So all of a sudden, that Death Jester...
That's what I was... beat me to it. The Death Jester looks a lot scarier with that right there.
I know we talked about 2 of them versus, you know, what the points for a solitaire was, but, you know, the more we dig into this, that what was this rule? The...
Death is not enough.
Yeah,
if any models flee from a unit in the same turn that it has been attacked by this model, then you can choose the first model that flees instead of your opponent choosing.
Yeah, there's some options.
Yeah,
I'm digging it. I'm digging the codex. It's making me want to put together some Harlequins right now.
Yeah, I've honestly, while we've been talking, I've been sitting here on the GW website. I've got this solitaire up with a 360, and I've just been spinning them around, just trying to figure out what I would take out of a Dark Angels army to just put a couple solitaires in there, and then how do I justify that with myself and the fluff?
It could work.
It could work. I mean, right?
Just get a webway. So that's why you need a webway gate. Just because you don't know how the Dark Angel showed up next to the webway gate, but it makes perfect sense that the solitaire would come out of it.
Yeah, I'll forge some narrative. It'll happen.
Well, guys, that's all we're going to talk about for Harlequins right now. We'll be the next week, army list, stratagems, some more Warlord traits, and that kind of stuff.
Okay, but I'm going to be honest. The army list that I'm going to come up with is going to be 100% Harlequins because you know I hate mixing and matching armies. So I don't think so, but I get some flack from some of my buddies. But I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to come up with one that's just Harlequins, and then you come up with something that's just everything Eldari, because I can't keep all those in my brain at the same time to come up with a list.
It's complicated, with especially now with all the pieces to the puzzle. There's going to be some combos, though, like those serious list designers that, in my mind, they're up till 5 in the morning every night in their basements just maniacally laughing.
Yeah,
they're not that either. That's what I'm doing right now.
They're going to create some monster combos.
Dude, it was kind of on topic, but I had a new customer came in and he just started getting into the hobby. And yesterday he just messages me on Facebook and he's like, dude, I am so excited about this hobby. And I was like, why? And he's like, because I'm not even playing right now, and I'm just making lists, and I'm tweaking. He said, there's something to do all the time. And I was like, that's what I tell everybody.
Yep.
So, that's half the fun of this hobby, is just coming up with lists.
I think it's a natural evolution.
Yeah.
Huh. Let me break out that codex while I got this 5 minutes. So nice. That's pretty cool, man. Well, yeah, that was actually going to be the hobby segment this week, but we ran a little long about what you can do in 10 minutes. Like when you can't focus on, you can't sit down and paint a whole unit or whatever. What can you do in the 10 minutes, right? If you get home from work before you start dinner. And today, but I'll just real quickly, I put some texture on bases. That's what nice. I did for my 10 minutes. But there's a list of things I think you can do it's something you can do in 15 minutes that won't – you don't get halfway through a step. You can do the whole thing in 10 minutes,
right.
Everything. And I think that's a good hobby segment that we will explore next week.
Absolutely.
Guys, y'all have a good rest of y'all's night.
You too, yes, buddy. Sir. Good night, world.
Thanks for listening.